All human behavior is belief-driven. So in order for me to ask this question, like, how can I make this better continuously, so often, even when I'm not noticing it consciously, I must have some kind of belief about making things better, and it must be a belief of significant consequence. Otherwise, you wouldn't do it every day. Does that make sense to you, yes or no?
Yes.
So I thought, okay, this question is definitely it. I thought of all these places I asked that question. If this is the question, here's what I want to know. What is the belief system? What is the belief of significant consequence behind that? So here's what I asked myself. I was sitting in the car when I did it because this stuff was flowing through me. I just pulled over. And I said, okay, what do I believe about making things better? And I said, I'm not going to filter. Let me just talk out loud and I'll write it down later. So I went, okay, what do I think about making things better? Making things better is what life's about. Making things better is my way of expressing love to everyone I meet because it's a gift I can give anyone. Making things better is the purpose of my life. Making things better is what I was made for. Making things better is who I am. Making things better is what I live for. Making things better is everything in life. To not make things better, it would be insane and a waste of a life. I'm going, whoa. Do I have beliefs of significant consequence here, yes or no?
Yes.
This question is tied to my beliefs about who I am as a person, known as my identity. Let me follow this. Say I. So I said, wow. People don't do things just for pleasurable reasons, though. In fact, most things you're obsessed about, that you have a lot of drive for, that you really want in your life, come because their initial drive came from pain or fear of pain. Like you see somebody who's driven to make a lot of money, usually they didn't have any growing up, and they link that as the source of pain. You see someone who wants love at all costs, they usually didn't feel very loved. Not always, but usually. If there's an obsessive focus, it may be driven purely by good things now, but it probably got ignited by pain. So I said, okay, what are the negative beliefs? I believe that, you know, by making things better, the world's better. Making things better, I'm serving God. Okay, what if I didn't make things better? And my immediate response from inside of me was, that's impossible. And the minute I saw that, and I did it so fast, like, that's impossible. I'm smart enough to go, ooh, I responded to that so fast, there must be a little wound in there somewhere. So I went, what if I didn't make them better? And my brain went, you always do. I thought, okay, time for me to just like flow. Let me just investigate. I know I'll always make it better, so there'd be no fear, but if I didn't, what would it mean? What would it mean if I didn't meet the object of my question? Because that's how you're going to know whether it's your primary question or not. What would it mean if I didn't meet the object of my question? The object of my question is to make it better. Some people's question is, how do I make everybody happy? So what's the object of their question? Make everyone happy. Some people's question is, what do I have to do so that people accept me? What's the object of their question that they have to meet to get people to accept them? Okay, do you follow me on this? Okay, so I said, what would happen if I didn't make things better? And I went, if I didn't think to make things better, then I wouldn't know what to do with my life. If I didn't make things better, I would feel my life was a waste. If I didn't make things better, you know, I'd have no reason to live. And I said this, and I was like, I can't even believe I believe that. You ever had that pop out of you and like realize? And I was like, I don't have a reason to live. I said, if I didn't make things better, then life would be worthless. I would be worthless. If I didn't make things better, then my life would be just a waste. If I didn't make things better, I might as well be dead. This is scary. And I was like, try to say, no, that's not what I believe. You ever done that? Oh, that's not what I believe. Where do you think you got the idea from? Right? But I don't want to admit that because it sounded so weird. And I thought, man, no wonder I ask this question all the time. Would this be your primary focus in life if you thought it was your whole identity, is how you got all love and all joy and all success and served God, and to not do it meant you were worthless, your life was a waste, and you might as well be dead? Might you be somewhat obsessed on making things better? That's the ultimate carrot and stick, baby, right? And the way you're going to know a question is your primary question is it's going to have a belief of such consequence that in the end, you'll say, to not do it means my life has no meaning, which is the equivalent of emotional death. In fact, many people say, I might as well be dead. Or some say, I feel like my life had no meaning, it'll be worthless. Well, if your life has no meaning, you're worthless, then no reason to live. That's how you know it's your primary question, not just a question you ask a lot. Is it has beliefs of significant consequence, and one belief is ultimately to not meet it, means your life has no meaning, you have no reason to go on, or you literally feel like you might as well not be alive. They're all the same thing. So I thought, man, to have beliefs that intense, to have a belief, all beliefs come from some significant emotional event, also known as a reference, right? And I thought the most intense references are pain references, aren't they? We tend to have pain as an initiator if it gets us. Not always, sometimes it's pleasure. But if you're obsessed by it, I guarantee you there's pain and pleasure linked to it. And so I thought, okay, well, where did this belief come from that I have to make things better? And if I don't, my life has no value. I'm not serving God, I'm not serving humanity, I'm not serving myself, I might as well be dead. I mean, where does that come from? And then I was just in state, you know, I was in the flow. You know, sometimes you get in a role, and all of a sudden it just popped in my head. I saw this flash, and I saw each of my fathers. I had four. And I saw my mom leaving each one of them. And I remember the pain of what it felt like, because I was attached to each one of them. And I remember my mom talking about my first father, my natural father, and saying how worthless he was because he never did anything to make things better around the house. And there's nothing better for us kids, nothing better. I mean, I heard those words, and what my brain learned was that was survival. You better make things better. And I thought, was there anything else? And then all of a sudden, I had a positive flash. I remembered being 4 years old, four and a half, and we went to the doctor's office. I remember there was this little magazine called Highlights. You guys remember that thing? Try and keep you busy forever, right? So I was in this little waiting room. She gave me this Highlights magazine. She said, listen, please, I need you to be so good. You know, mama's got to go in here. You got to stay here and be really good. And there were a couple patients in the room, and then they were taken. And I was just there alone reading this Highlights magazine. And all of a sudden, I remember, and I just saw this vividly. It was like I was there again. I remember hearing this sniveling kind of crying thing, and I was obviously tiny. And I walked up to this little ledge, and I could hear behind it, but I couldn't see that the woman who's behind the counter, no one is around, she thought. So she was just crying uncontrollably. So I walked right over to the little door, and I opened the door, and I came around the corner, and I saw this woman crying, and I came up and I hugged her. Right? And she just looked at me. I'll never forget. She was crying, and she looked at me. And also she looked again, also, and she smiled so big. And I don't remember what I said. I said something to her. And all I remember is she said to me about a dozen times, an incantation went right in my brain, man. You are such a gift from God. You are such a gift from God. I love you so much. Boom, I was hooked for life. That's why I'm here, right? You know, it's like, it made me feel so good to make this woman be happy. It was my nature to do that, right? Some things are in your nature. But I got reinforced from my nature. And I'll never forget when my mom came out. She was like, what did you do? And she was like, this woman loves you. I don't remember what I said. I just, you know, whatever I said, I said. She said, oh my God. And my mom repeated the same thing. You are such a gift from God. I'm so proud of you. You're so incredible. You made that woman's whole life better. So now what do I got? I got massive pain if you don't make it better, massive pleasure if you do. Plus, it's my nature to do that anyway because I care, but now I'm wired. Now my belief system develops, you got to make it better. Now, by the way, as I learn things and I enjoy them and I share them with my friends when I'm 14 years old and it changes their life, I see them light up, which makes me feel incredible. So I'm not doing it for pain anymore. I'm doing it for pleasure. I feel so happy. I get all this love for it. And now I'm wired every day. How else can I make it better? How many follow this? Say aye. Now, I am very lucky. I found early in my life a primary question that has moved me with massive acceleration to access tools that create an extraordinary quality of life for the people I meet, but also for me too. I was very lucky. My question could be, how do I survive the environment I'm living in? Because the environment I was living in, that could have easily been my question. It was pretty hairy. There was no food at times. There was no money. There was violence. I grew up in a very interesting environment. But fortunately, I was always trying to figure out how to make it better, which was a little scary sometimes because I didn't know quite how, but I had to find a way. Make it better between my parents. Make it better here. Make it better there. And it made me incredibly skilled. Right? Now, not everybody is as lucky as I am. Some people's questions have, for their whole life, basically caused them to take two steps forward and three back. I got very lucky. So I want you to become aware of it. All questions, by the way, including making it better, have a downside. And so the goal is to look at your question, even if you have a wonderful one, and see where, how could I enhance this, if not transform it? Most of us start getting attached to our primary question, like attached to a belief. You are not your question. You can change to any question. And whatever question has been great for you up until now, maybe it's time to enhance. My question had some challenges, and I'll explain it to you in a moment, but let me give you another example. As soon as I figured this out and realized how potent this was, I started noticing it everywhere. That day I went to Disneyland with my kids, and I went and saw The Hunchback of Notre Dame, the play. And at the end of the play, they have this confetti that just explodes into the air, and it lasts forever, just spindles through the air. And so I, of course, picked some up and put it in my pocket. For what reason? I was thinking, oh my God, I could use that at one of the mastery programs because it's so beautiful with that whole new thing. I'm figuring out how to make mastery better while I'm at Disneyland, right? And I had it in my pocket. So later that night, I'm with my daughter, and I'm talking to my daughter, and I was saying to her, I said, honey, I said, tell me something. I told her the story just like I told you, exactly like I told you. Because while I was telling her, I knew that she was searching for her own primary question, just as you've been, trying to see what you could relate to or not. And so as she heard the story, she was relating. And so she said, I think I know what it is, Dad. And I said, what is it? She goes, how do I protect myself? And I said, what? How do you protect yourself? That's your primary question? Right? She was the only other person I've ever done it on, right? So I was like, I thought it'd be something different. And I said, what do you mean to protect yourself? You don't need to protect yourself. And she goes, I don't know, Dad. And then she got really teary-eyed. She goes, I don't know what it is. I know I have to ask this question. I know I have to focus on this all the time. And I thought, honey, I said, you were the most protected person in the family. I mean, I'd never mentioned this to the other kids, but you were the most supported, most loved of everybody. No question, because you're the only girl. I mean, you had a play. You were one of 52 flowers in The Wizard of Oz, and we had 4,000 people in the seats there cheering for you. Only slight exaggeration, probably 30 people would show up to cheer for Jolie when she was this tall. I mean, this girl got love, attention, focus, and support better than anybody. I said, how could you possibly do it? She goes, I don't know, I don't know. She started to get teary-eyed, and I said, honey, what's going on? She goes, I don't know. It's just, she goes, something inside of me is like fearful right now. And I said, well, tell me more. I thought, well, she lives in New York City now. She did at that time. You know, people have to really be prepared in New York. It's a different kind of environment. And she goes, yeah, I think that's part of it. I said, well, let's find out if that's really your primary question. I said, what do you believe about protecting yourself? What are we looking for to make sure it's the primary question? A belief of significant consequence. She goes, I believe, well, that if I protect myself, then I can make my life work. I go, well, all right, maybe it's not so bad. If I protect myself, then I can achieve what I want. If I protect myself, I can, my life will be okay. My life will be good. Okay. What if you don't protect yourself? She said, I have to. I said, what if you don't protect yourself? And she said, no one else will. I said, honey, I said, that's ridiculous. I mean, what do you mean no one else? I don't know. I just know if I don't protect myself, I'll die. Is this it? Yes or no?
Yes.
Is this her primary question? Yes or no?
Yes.
How do you know? What's the criteria for knowing it's a primary question as opposed to just a general question? That she asks it a lot, yes, but more importantly, that it has a belief that says if I don't meet the object of the question, my emotional or physical survival is at stake. Okay? My identity is at stake. So I dug around, without wasting your time with the whole story, I can just tell you this. As I dug around, all of a sudden I got it. I said, honey, I think I know what it is. Tell me if I'm wrong. I said, the reason you feel like you got to protect yourself is you have so much love from mom, so much love from me, so much love from your brothers, but you don't from your natural father. And then she started crying. I said, I know you're trying to protect yourself because she made it to Broadway. He told her whole life she would never be successful. I told her whole life that she was going to be successful. I never dissed him in any way, haven't to this day. But he was a very different belief system. The reason he dissed her was because he didn't make it, and he wanted to be an actor. So for her to succeed would mean he was less what? Significant. So he couldn't afford that emotionally, even though he's just her dad. So she invited him to come to Broadway, and she was on Broadway for a year, and he never came. He always had an excuse. And it destroyed her emotionally, because I don't care who it is. You want your father or your mother to be proud of you, right? And I said, you got to know. I said, he couldn't come. He's a human being. He couldn't come. He couldn't face that he told you your whole life you couldn't make it, and you did. Because then it would make him question himself, and maybe he shouldn't have quit. I said, he's a good man. He loves you. He just didn't know how to deal with this. And I said, but I got to tell you, as I listen to this, I said, part of me is like, wants to remind you of something. I said, maybe this is my ego, but here's what I believe. If he had been the father you wished he'd be, your mother would never have left him. If your mother never left him, you would never become my daughter. If you never become my daughter, you would never develop the beliefs and the values and the drives you have, because I know you've been home recently to Colorado to where you were as a little girl, and all those people are just the way they were before. Didn't you tell me that? They haven't changed a bit. You never had the dance lessons, the push. You never had me sitting down going, you're going to New York. You never got in the environment. If the thing you're hurting about had actually happened, if it hadn't hurt you, you wouldn't be where you are in your life, honey. I don't believe. I said, maybe that's just my ego. Maybe you would have found a way anyway. She started crying. She goes, no, I love you. I know you are so important. I said, it's not about my importance. It's about you finding balance. Because you have an illusion of loss. Whenever a person has pain, they have the illusion of loss of one or more of their six needs. So she was having a feeling of loss of connection and love. Do you guys follow this? So she never wanted to feel that again. So her primary focus began, how do I protect myself? And you know how that was showing up? In every way you can imagine. I met her boyfriend, who she really liked, and he told me about the first 6 months of the relationship. He'd get together, he started to get close to her, and she'd go, I need my space. And she'd just leave and not talk to him for 2 and 3 months. And after he told me all these stories, like horror stories, I turned to Jolie, I said, Jolie, if I was a guy and you were there, I would have dumped you a long time ago. I go, I want a woman with a small carry-on set of emotional baggage, not a whole Jed Clampin truck full. I said, you know, you're a nightmare. I said, it's because of this question. Because what happened is she started to get close and she go, I got to protect myself, I got to protect myself. And she'd pull back. I would call her at 12 noon, New York time, 3 o'clock California time, and she'd be in bed. And I'm like, what are you doing? She goes, oh, I'm really tired. We had a show last night. I went, the show is 2.5 hours. It's a Broadway show. You're not even on the stage the whole time. I mean, come on. I walked 22 miles through the snow uphill both ways. You know? But I mean, I was really getting frustrated going, what is the matter? And she goes, well, I got to protect my voice. I got to protect this. I got to protect that. And I went, you know what? I said, I know I don't develop the same level of quality and I've strained mine, but you know, I've spoken for 20 plus years, 23 years, and I've never, ever completely lost it in what I was doing. And I said, I'm sure I could, but by trying to protect it, you tense up. Trying to sleep, trying to protect yourself all the time, you're making yourself crazy. So when this primary question thing happened, I started seeing all these consequences in her life that were coming from this change in her focus. That it all come from a significant emotional event called her father rejecting her, which is the way she interpreted it, her natural father.